listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, 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 live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality, with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, April 25th, 2018. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Glad to be here.
And Michael Kelly here with us as well.
Good evening, everyone. Always happy to be here.
I'd like to welcome those joining us live as well as those listening to the archives. We appreciate you joining us tonight. The Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit as well as to explore science and spirituality. And in addition to this weekly program, ICMH Church also offers several other educational programs, including EmpoweredRecovery.com, which offers help for the friends and family of alcoholics and addicts, Paranexus.org, an association of anomalous researchers, MetaphysicsInstitute.org, our flagship school that offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysical science, spiritual counseling, holistic life coaching, holistic healing, hypnosis, paranormal science, and many other areas, and Thomas Francis University, which offers standalone metaphysical courses and degrees at TFUniversity.org. So as we've been doing the last few weeks, rather than reading our abbreviated principles of belief, we've been taking one of the principles each week and kind of discussing it a little bit more. And so tonight we're going to talk more about it's going to be principle of belief number 5, and I'm going to pull that up here. Okay, so principle of number 6, this is not the abbreviated version, this is the full version, and these are available on the website at metaphysicalhumanism.org. And principle number 6 reads, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both a physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state and plane of existence. So this is going to serve kind of as a basis of our program tonight, why consciousness survives death of the physical body. And so let me just go over this, what this principle encompasses, to kind of get our discussion going. And again, starting with consciousness, it's like, the interesting thing about consciousness is that nobody can quite define it or, you know, locate it. You know, we equate the mind with consciousness, not the brain, but the mind, you know, is our consciousness. And nobody can really locate the mind. You know, a lot of people thought, well, it's in the brain. Well, that's not necessarily true. Science cannot locate the mind, because there are different reasons for that. You know, people have had brain injuries and part of their brain has been, you know, hurt, injured, and even removed. And they still, it's like the brain rewires itself in some ways, and they still retain some of those memories, because the memory is part of the consciousness, which is not necessarily located in the brain. It's non-local. So if you think of it in this way, it's kind of, use a computer as an analogy. You know, a computer possesses a central processing unit, or CPU, as we call it, a graphical user interface, which is basically your screen, and software, you know, like Microsoft Windows or Apple, whatever, and hardware such as the screen, the keyboard, the mouse, and so forth. And so if you, using this analogy, the CPU, the graphical user interface, including the screen, the keyboard, and mouse, and so forth, would represent the brain. The keyboard would represent the senses, you know, the screen, and you, the user, would represent the non-local mind or consciousness, since you're not part of that computer. You're outside of it. You're non-local to the computer. Computers can't do anything without programming. They need something outside of themselves to get them going. So a computer is only meaningful if a non-local force acts on it. So if you think of consciousness in that way. And so when we think of consciousness, it's that energy, it's that thing, and it's part of that thing that connects all of us, you know, collective consciousness. And that consciousness can even, I mean, it goes into all living things and to some extent, some measure. But let's bring this now around to consciousness transcending death of the physical body. Since consciousness or the mind is non-local, it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily die with the body. It doesn't die with the body. And this is largely based on the survival hypothesis. And you're probably familiar with it, especially if you've been a student or are a student. The survival hypothesis simply means, it says that, you know, energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be transformed. So that energy that is us cannot be destroyed. And so when you look at all of the available evidence from a number of different sources, it's reasonable to conclude that consciousness survives death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. That means we don't lose our individuality. We remain individuals. And who, you know, I mean, none of this is provable objectively, you know, scientifically. But again, we're looking at rational proof rather than objective proof because we just don't have that. So rational proof would argue that we do go on. And there's so many different things, reasons why we say that. And we'll talk about those a little bit. But I want to pause here and invite Dr. Hunter's comments or Michael's comments, if you have any.
Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, I was going to say Dr. Hunter's comments would be far more interesting.
Okay, then.
Funny. Well, no, if we're staying logical, I don't have a lot to to contribute. Yeah, I know that there's science to it because this is a really subjective, you know, belief system. Often when we have experiences, we don't go to the science of it to verify it, you know, and it's so there's like the left brain, right brain kind of approach to looking at it. So right at this point, I don't have a lot to inject.
Well, but you'll be coming in shortly, though, when we get to the other side of this thing. Michael, do you have any comments you'd like to offer?
Well, I would just say that, I mean, that's the way that I, especially earlier on when you were making the analogy about the relation of the mind to a computer, it's in a lot of ways how I kind of have thought about the human experience in a certain way. I have my favorite twist on that, which is very similar, is just that the act of being human is in some ways like a computer where the hardware is your physical body, the physical limits that you can do. You know, human beings cannot fly. We have our physical limitations. The software is the education that you learn throughout life, the lessons you learn from your environment, your education, and formal and otherwise. And then the other component is the user, which, you know, which I always say is the soul. But when it comes to the notion of a soul, it's kind of a polarizing word in some ways and in some areas because it kind of brings with it a lot of baggage of a traditional dogmatic nature. But where I kind of look at it as simply being the sum of our parts, you know, the essence right. of our being, our mind.
Consciousness. Even.
Exactly. It's yeah. That's it. So that's something that I've really used to as a reference point, as kind of an analogy to try to conceptualize existence in a lot of ways.
All right, good. So let's talk about some of the, shall we say, so-called scientific evidence for life after death, and then we'll get into some of the more subjective parts of it. But several years ago, you know, of course, I was raised a Christian and all that, and when I left that 20 something years ago, you know, I had to rethink the whole thing because I left those beliefs behind, and so it took me, I don't know, a few years to really gather enough rational evidence, so to speak, for me to finally embrace this concept that consciousness survives death of the physical body. And a lot of that had to do with my paranormal investigations that we would go on. And so, gosh, more than 12 years ago, we were doing paranormal investigation. We always use psychics, and I had the opportunity to meet several really good psychics. And so we would have these different things that you just couldn't explain any other way. And we would have communication with spirits via EMF meters and other and EVPs. You know, where does that come from? Now, somebody who is could argue, well, that's just, you know, human, the human psyche, you know, the psi phenomena for human beings. But that didn't always explain it. And one of the other things that really, really got me thinking was when we would do table tipping, which is fascinating. And of course, you could argue, well, that's collective consciousness from the people sitting at the table too. Well, that, you know, that still pretty much argues strongly for psi phenomena in human beings, which I know is there. Everybody's psychic to an extent. It's just part of the natural human makeup. And so we would be involved in these table tippings and communicate with various spirits and all that, and that table would absolutely move of its own volition. And again, I don't know where the energy came from, you know, whether that was collective consciousness of the people sitting there, that energy, the collective energy that would actually move it, but it was being directed by someone else, because there were too many things that happened that way that could be verified that just you couldn't explain any other way. So as I got to looking at these different things that were happening, these different experiences that I was involved with, and then when you add in, you know, near-death experiences, and then you add in shared death experiences, which, and if you're not familiar with that term, shared death experiences, where it's the family and friends, especially the family around the person who is dying, that it gets to share in that near-death experience that the person has. But in this case, in the case of a shared death experience, the person actually dies, the family member, whatever, and they experience part of that same phenomena that people who have near-death experiences experience. So there's a lot of different cumulative evidence, so to speak, that would argue that, you know, this is just not it. And then the other thing that you have to factor in too is just the sheer and utter lack of synth. It's, let me reword this. For us to die, like, you know, a lot of people think we just die and we're dead, that just makes no sense. It's not reasonable. It's utter nonsense, because there's too much to us. There's too much to who we are as individuals for that to just die. It makes no sense whatsoever that we would just live a few years and then that's it, no more. So from a reasonable point of view, just a standpoint of reason, dying and being dead and that's it makes no sense. So there's a handful, and we just don't have time to go into depth into any of these, but those are the things that got me convinced that, yeah, something's going on here. We're communicating with spirits, we're communicating, you know, people are experiencing near-death experiences, and no, it's not as a result of oxygen deprivation to the brain. That's been ruled out, because shared death experiences, you can't explain that. And then there's the deathbed visions, you know, where people who are close to death in the hours, days, perhaps prior to death, they might even be unconscious, or they might even have, you know, not senility, but what's the word? You guys help me out. It's right on the tip of my tongue. Yeah. I know it. Yeah, dementia, it's a simple word. Alzheimer's. Yeah, dementia, Alzheimer's. Yeah, it's one of those things after 50, I can't help it. Anyway. But anyway, so they have dementia, and they'll come and they'll become very lucid, and they'll be seeing their mother, their husband, their wife, whoever it is that was close to them, and talk to them lucidly. And that's been experienced over and over again by many, many people. So those are some of the more, shall we call them, objective or, you know, rational types of evidence for life after death. And then we get into the more subjective and part of it was subjective too, because I had my own experiences. And this is where Dr. Hunter can come in, because she sees dead people, not to be funny, but you know, she's had some experience, and we've had experiences when she and I have been talking, and you know, I can't explain that any other way. So for somebody who actually has the ability to communicate with spirits, with ghosts, with whatever you want to call them, with deceased people, they're still people, you know, and even interdimensionals and so forth. Dr. Hunter is good at that. Dr. Hunter, any comments on why, you know, on your thoughts on this whole consciousness transcending death?
Well sure. I mean, it's always a big discussion in my life, but I think we have to first address that people who have not had exposure to any kind of experience tend to be not so much disbelievers, but believers of something else. And we have to respect that, because it's not in their reality or their sphere of influence, so to speak. But people who have, let's say, seen spirits or had some kind of an altered type of, oh, I had dreams that came true, those are people who start to question consciousness, at least, who are we? And then that takes them on a different journey. There's other people like myself, that was never a question to me, even as a child. So for me, when other people are putting away their, you know, their imaginary friends, mine never went away. And so it just is part of my reality. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, if people have had a trauma, such as a heart attack, claim to come back, and they're completely changed, not that they remember some kind of near-death experience, except that they feel different and now have more open ideas. Maybe it's they just don't remember. So there's all these varying thought processes, and this is why I try to be really careful, because it's purely subjective belief system and based on experience. Now, having said that, my disclaimer is people who are Christians have a vision, they're not going to translate what they see as Buddha. You see, Right. They're always going to see what they believe is an imagery of Christ. Somebody who is a Buddhist isn't necessarily going to relate to seeing, Muhammad. Just see, it's by we have this subconscious, unconscious kind of programming, as we talked earlier about the brain, and how we translate information. And that's really, really important when it comes to subjective experiences, when it comes to paranormal or alternate kinds of not so ordinary. I think it's all ordinary, but I think more people have these experiences than not. They just don't know how to understand it or relate to it. And there's a great fear. A lot of people are programmed to fear such things. Oh my God, I have a ghost in my house. And I say, cool, did you ask him his name? You know, I sit down and have tea. So I think this is what we have to be really cautious about, is how we interpret what we're seeing and how we're – the language that we use, if you know what I mean. So the language I use is spirits and consciousness. Other people say angels. I don't use that word angels because that's not my frame of reference, although I'm not opposed to it. I know what people mean. But – again, it's that, what are you seeing? How do you translate what you see? And then how does that process through your all of your other belief systems? So that's why I'm really careful in this topic. Is there life after death and consciousness? To me, there's no question about that. It's just what is it? And how then are each of us translating that kind of information? So it's really kind of touchy. I mean, I could go on with the bazillion experiences that, the least of which, I had a whole bunch of them. Spirits come join me, visit me this morning. I said, hey, I haven't seen you guys in ages. Because there is this misconception or this preconceived notion that once you see a spirit, like they hang around all the time. And that's just not true. Some of them pass through. I haven't seen somebody in 10 years, and I go, wow, is it ever nice to see you? It's because I don't hold on to things, and I don't try to control what it is that's happening. Because the minute you try to control it, you know, it's that the minute you see something, it changes. The minute you try to control something, it's not what it was anymore. So it's just to breathe with it, surrender to it, and let it go, and be open to new and otherwise possibilities. So that's my initial contribution here.
And that's great. And I'm glad you brought up the point about, in essence, how to view them. And I want to just expand on that a little bit. A lot of people are afraid of spirits or ghosts or whatever. And frankly, I grew up that way. I was deathly afraid of demons because that's what the religion taught me. You know, they were evil, they were out to get me, blah, blah, blah. And that's just not true. You know, there is no Satan. There are no demons. There are people. Spirits are people. Just like you and me, just in a different realm, a different phase of existence.
Well, there are some pissy spirits.
But there are also some pissy people.
True.
I mean,
that's true.
There's some people who are not very nice, and then there are really nice people. And the same thing is true with spirits. Now, and the reason that I say that is because I hear stories, especially from ghost hunters, who will talk about, you know, evil spirits and how they're harming people. And I have never, in all my experience, been able to validate any of that. And, you know, that goes for possessions and all this stuff, that if they were capable of harming human beings, we would have so many cases of that, you couldn't even count that high. So we got to keep our heads on our shoulders, our feet on the ground. I know that there are, the spirits are just like people, and there's some nice people and there's some not so nice people. And so that's the way to view spirits. They're not to be afraid of, and you don't need to fear them. Now, some people might be startled by them, but anybody can startle you. I mean, if you're walking down the hallway and I jump out from a corner and say, boo, it's going to startle you, but you're not afraid of me, you know, that kind of a thing. So yeah, you can get startled, but that's not the same as being afraid of. So there's no reason to fear spirits in any way, shape, or form. And usually when they're around and you know it, that means you've got some degree of psychic sensitivity to that. And you may not know who it is. You may know who it is. You may not know them. And if you're not in a position to help them, you have to state that. I'm sorry, I can't help you. Please find somebody who can and move on. And in other words, we need to treat spirits the same way as we treat people. And that includes boundaries. You know, they it's just because they're a spirit and they can appear wherever, walk into through walls, whatever, doesn't automatically give them the right to be in your home unless you have invited them. And you can also demand that they move on. And it's up to you. It's a personal thing. So that's how we view spirits. They're not something to be afraid of. They're just they're people, and some of them are lost, just like people are. Some people are lost, and they don't know where to find themselves. Some people don't know where they're going. Well, same is true with spirits. And so view them as people, and it will help a lot. So let's get back now to the topic of life after death. So just to sum up a little bit, we've talked about some rational, reasonable evidence why our consciousness continues on. And we've talked about subjective. And, you know, and that there's a lot of hope in this, folks. You know, all of us have lost loved ones, many loved ones over the years. So why, in my mind, why go somewhere where, well, maybe they're in hell? Well, there's no hell. I mean, how could a... And that's so opposite of any kind of rational thinking. It's not even funny. But where are they? Well, you know, it's like all of us. We're all on our own path. We're all on our own journey. We all have lessons to learn. And I don't believe that stops when we pass on. We just pass into a new chapter, another realm, another phase of life where we continue to grow and learn and so forth. And so our loved ones, they're on their journey. And that's their, there's a lot of hope there. They're not gone, and I have every hope that we will reunite with them at one point when we move on. Those are comforting thoughts. They're reasonable. We can't prove anything, you know, any part of it, but then again, we can't prove a lot of quantum physics either. Yet, they're pursuing that. Science is pursuing that. So hopefully that gives you some comfort. Any comments, Michael, you'd like to make?
Oh, I was just thinking out loud in the chat here, too, about when I think about the afterlife and the next phase of existence, a lot of that comes in the way that I try to understand it is at its core. So I think that there's strong evidence that there are other sentient life forms on this planet, you know, considering like orca whales, some of the great apes, that have intelligence and awareness approaching that of a human, obviously a much more primitive version, but still that they can be almost self-aware. What does the afterlife mean to them? What about, I know that not all spirits are human, but are there other spirits that had a mortal existence on this plane? What about if, and some of these are just open-ended questions that have no answer, and those are the funnest to ask, but what about life elsewhere in the universe? It's expected mm-hmm. that there's intelligent life elsewhere in the universe. What is the afterlife to them? Does it differ based on species, or is it universal across the board for consciousness and awareness?
Well, I have a report that's going to the home planet when I leave here.
Yeah, we're not going to come off good in that.
So, you know, I think that what we might want to consider is that we are pure energy before entering an embodiment. And this journey is how we create. And then when we're done, when the body's done, we leave and return to the source. You know, and of course, we can talk about reincarnation, we can talk about a lot of things, but in essence, we're talking tonight about consciousness and the essence of energy. There's actually some scientists say that the soul weighs about 7 grams, I believe, weighing a body right before and after death. When that, and I've had this experience to see, it's not a creation of my mind, actually see someone's spirit lift from their body, and of course you're forever changed when that happens. So that there is this other consideration that energy has some kind of a mass, or some, it takes up certain amount of space, and when you're with your body, and then of course it leaves, and then the body is just returns back to the earth. And so I think that in the consciousness, I think that the whole planet is conscious and every life form is conscious. I happen to believe in my experience that animals have souls and they are conscious, but within the reason of their physical body, you know, mm-hmm. The thoughts, the creativity. I had a dog that came back to me 3 times in this lifetime. I knew it was him every time, and he came back with the same bad habits. I say, oh, man, haven't you learned it yet? Please, you know? And but that's okay. It's just funny because I just knew him every time. And I'm seeing a lot of responses in the chat, too. People have had similar experiences. So, consciousness is, I don't know, I question about this personality being the same when I leave. I think that we return to some other greater essence of character or energy, and only parts of us come, and we're gradually remembering that as we live in this body. That's my take on it, and we return to the source. So think of, you know, you've got one big ball of energy and little bubbles of it come down into bodies, and we turn to that great big ball afterward.
Right, and but you're talking about your own personal source, your full source, your full self.
No, I think it's to the universe. I do. I think we return our little bubble of souls, return to a greater and all these other greater sources, and that different expressions of us return with, and sometimes with a memory. It's kind of like if I'm one big bubble out there and there's only a part of me here, I can tap in to remember that big bubble that's existing out in the universe. But when I leave this body, I go to that bubble that's a part of many other bubbles, kind of. And it's all kind of working together like the cells of a body. So that's my vision of it.
And so. And I don't know if I think I know you after this long, but I'm not sure I'm understanding. But I just want to set straight too, or clarify, I should say, that with metaphysical humanism, I don't believe that we lose our distinctiveness, and I don't think you think that either, based on what I've known, unless it's news to me. But that's one thing that it's not reasonable that we would, like some religions will teach that, you know, you're like a drop in the ocean. Once you die, that drop goes back in the ocean, and basically you lose who you are. And I, that to me, in my mind, and again, none of this is provable, but in my mind, I don't see that, you know. And especially if reincarnation is true, you know, then we've got lessons to learn. We keep coming back to, we learn them. And again, reincarnation is, you know, it could be true. It may not be true. It may be true in some way. You know, and we don't have an official belief on reincarnation, but it's also a very subjective thing. And I know Dr. Hunter, she remembers that stuff. I don't, but she does. And so
I think it's different, if I can say this, different expressions of the same thing. Each time you're coming into a body, it's you're carrying your soul, but you only remember so much because you're joined with a different body. The organics mixed with the spirit makes for a different expression. Because you're mixing with DNA, you're mixing,
I don't doubt that.
The earth. So there, it's a different expression. So our, whatever thread of distinctiveness the soul has, it's just changing form. And of course, for me, and this is just, again, my reality. Now, for instance, I have zero connection to any time period between 0 AD and 950 AD. But I have huge amounts of memory from 950 AD until being here right now, and memories of many lifetimes. Now, I want to really just exercise this, that I keep an open mind, that it can be tapping into realities on other dimensions of space-time. And be that as it may, this is my preference to see in a linear. And so I believe that when I kind of agreed to come to the planet in 950 AD.
Like, what was wrong with you?
I was thinking that there's a journey, and I don't believe I was alone either. In my view, we come as kind of like group efforts, maybe.
And doesn't, you told me I was there at some point.
Yeah, at some point along the way. And so it's, again, it's a viewpoint, and that's why we each have our own kind of, again, that subjectivity. It's really tricky because we can all be saying the same thing, just different. Mm-hmm. And because each of us is, let's say you're sitting on a clock and you're seeing it from 3 o'clock, I'm seeing it from 7 o'clock. We're all trying to, it's a juxtaposition, right? Mm-hmm. We're all trying to see the center and come up with some kind of articulation or language to understand that we are more than the sum of a body.
Yeah. Synergistic. Yep.
Yep.
Excellent. So let's take this a slight different direction to kind of wrap up this discussion. And in a few minutes, we'll read some inner oracle cards. And so if you'd like a card pulled for you, put your name in the chat room. And if you're not familiar with our inner oracle cards, they're basically 54 cards that are self-discovery. They make you think. And they cover all of the beliefs of metaphysical humanism, many things taught in our courses as well. So if you want a card pulled, you can do that. Put your name in the chat room. We'll get to that in a few minutes. The last aspect of this that I want to address is, okay, so there's just so much anecdotal and reasonable evidence that consciousness transcends the death of the physical body. What does that mean to us today, for our life today? Well, first off, it gives us a lot of hope that this is not it. And so we don't need to fear death per se. No, nobody wants to die per se. You know, like we don't want to end it, because there's that fear of the unknown and so forth, which is common with people. But it gives us hope that this is not it. And it gives us hope that we can still reunite with past loved ones and pets and whatnot. Those are all, that's very, lots of hope there. But what else does it mean to us in this life? And it means that we, if we continue on, then we're not waiting for anything. We don't need to wait to die to go do something. We need to do that today. We're on our own path. We all have a right to walk our own path. And without judgment from anyone else, we need to do no harm and do right today, and make the most of our life today, because if life continues on, then it just continues on beyond this. We'll continue doing what we're doing in many ways, and perhaps greater ways, and hopefully greater ways. But we need to do that now. You know, we need to find meaning in our life now. And whatever that meaning is, we need needs to involve our purpose in getting that meaning. For example, if the thing that brings meaning to your life is helping other people, then how do you express that? However you express that is your purpose, that, and it can change over time, but your meaning stays the same. So today you might be doing spiritual counseling. To, you know, in a year or 5 or 10, you might be doing something else that helps people in a different way. It's still the same meaning, but the purpose has changed, or the expression of it has changed. And so live your life to the full now. You know, don't say that's too hard. Say, ask how hard can it be? Whatever it is you want to do. Determine your dream, determine what brings meaning to your life, and then be about it. Go after that. Be, you know, realize your full potential now, and every day do something to further that potential, to realize more of that potential, and to do no harm and to do right, to be part of the solution to this planet and this world, and not part of the problem. You know, that means doing right, helping people out when you can, doing the right thing, paying it forward, which is the primary work of metaphysical humanists, doing good for other people, you know, having, being tolerant, not being prejudiced or against any person for their gender or skin color or sexual orientation or anything like that. We're all people. And we're all equal. We're all made of the same stuff, stardust. You know, everything came from that. So nobody is any better or worse than anyone else. And that means that we accept people for who they are, and we try to do the best we can. And that's part of it. Now, the last aspect of this is, what about those who have predeceased us? You know, they've gone, you know, it can be loved ones, family members, parents, children, whatever. They're doing their thing, and you'll see them soon enough, too soon if you ask me, but that's a different matter. What are you doing? Keep doing what you're doing, and in due time, you'll see them again. That's the hope that we have, and that's a reasonable hope, and that's a comforting hope. So do everything you can in this life so that, you know, you'll do better in the next one, because you're going to keep going on, so nothing changes really. I hope that makes sense. Any concluding comments?
Well, you know, if I can just inject this, Dr. Jeff is with us tonight, and he drew a card for the group tonight, and I think it's really appropriate to read number 8, okay. Freedom. It's in the wild card suit. Freedom is a state of being. It's an unencumbered mind that can remain open and move forward. Freedom is the ability to recreate the self, shedding old ideas that no longer serve any purpose for present and future evolution. Freedom is the knowing of who and what one is as a free and sovereign being of the universe. Freedom means one can be or do anything one wants within the limits of do no harm and do right. I think it's really appropriate.
Excellent. Yeah,
it fits.
Any concluding comments, Michael?
Nothing that really comes to mind. I think it has already been said very well. I would just state that absolutely I agree that, you know, well, I guess one point that I would make is that what will come after will come after. What's important is what's going on here and now in this life, and how we can make a difference and how we can make it better. We'll get to the next phase soon enough.
Mm-hmm. All right. Excellent comments. Good comments in the chat room. Appreciate those. And so now let's be about pulling our cards. Who's first on our list?
Well, we got Dr. Shirley. Dr. Shirley's with us tonight. Nice to see you here, Shirley. I pulled number 13, positive consciousness. And I think Dr. Tabitha's on deck, Michael. So if you want to get that one ready, tuning in to Tabitha. So, Dr. Shirley, positive consciousness, number 13. And that's in the existential suit for any of the newcomers. It is our soul's natural inclination to be positive. Therefore, positive consciousness transcends positive thinking. As human beings, we can find ourselves with the need to filter negativities and ill will. Be at peace with your natural self and continue displaying goodwill toward others. Don't hate or hold hatred in your heart. Maintain your positive attitude even in the face of obstacles and discouragements, for they are temporary. So that's just a little reminder there for you, Shirley. I kind of translate that to don't let them push you around out there. So that's kind of the way I see it. So, all right, do you have one for Dr. Tabitha, Michael?
I do, and I've pulled number 18, evolution. Evolution is the driving force of all life. Change is always afoot. Be aware and participate in the evolution of present energies that change situations. Resistance to change is born from fear of losing control. Resistance to change prolongs discomfort. But fear not. Personal growth and enlightenment are sure to result in the wake of your own evolution and that of life around you. Thus, entropy is lowered.
Good.
Good one for Dr. Tabitha. Now, I have another. Dr. Darlene is on the list. And I have just pulled Balance and Order, number 8, in the Life Leadership Paragon. So this is for you, Darlene. With this card, balance and order in life or in a specific area is present, or it needs to be. If experiencing adversity, look for what's out of its proper order. Adversity is a state of disorder. Once order's restored, adversity fades. Moreover, self-completeness and success will ensue once order and balance are restored to the life leadership paragon areas of self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will. So that's either saying, and it's up to you to interpret that, you either have that balance managing and organizing itself right now, and you're already in the works to see what's out of order and putting it in, or there's a little area, so only you can answer that for yourself. But I think that's another good one.
Forgive me, which card was that again?
Number 8, balance and order.
Great. And I think Fran, we miss Fran.
You got that one, Michael, for Fran?
Absolutely. And I've pulled one for Fran, and Fran also pulled one for the evening. And Fran had pulled number 21, and I'll read that one real quick. It's insight and wisdom. I quite like it. Wisdom is the successful application of knowledge using experience and understanding. Insight is discernment in seeing the underlying truth. This may be a time to look deep into your inner character and underlying truth to understand motives and reasons. Insight, wisdom, and acceptance of the true nature of a present situation or individual is necessary to gain a deeper understanding as well as to discover potential situations.
Good one. A little thought-provoking, too.
Yeah,
interesting.
And
now we have an... sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, and for Fran, I pulled number 32, which is sympathy and empathy. Bear with me. Mercy is compassion in action and fulfills a kind act of paying it forward. Sympathy, or sensitivity for one's plight, and empathy, relating to another's plight, each requires a need, compassion, and action to fulfill a soul's need to explore and investigate and educate. Always extend the benefit of the doubt until there is no longer a reason to do so.
Good.
Messages. We have a newcomer with us tonight. Welcome, Jeannie. I believe I'm pronouncing your name correctly by your comment earlier in the chat. I pulled number 9, empowerment. Taking your power back is literally all-powerful and absolutely priceless. It alone is the solution, in principle, for virtually every problematic circumstance in your life, from a bad relationship to spiritual harassment. Retaining your power means to retain your wholeness. When you are whole, you're empowered. Empower others by doing no harm and doing right. Share the best of yourself. Sharing the best of yourself is encouraging and uplifting to you as well as others. So, oh, she says I'm correct. Thanks, Jeannie, for that. I was hoping I pronounced your name right. That's a really empowering card, Jeannie. Empowerment. So, and welcome to the group tonight. It's nice to see you here.
And she pulled a card, too, for the number 16.
Number 16. Well, I'll just go ahead and read that. So thanks for pulling that card, Jeannie. Human consciousness transcends. Hello. Are we talking about that tonight? Yeah. Human consciousness transcends the physical body, allowing a new chapter of life to continue. Stability and peace is assured with continuity in the flow of day-to-day life. There is reason to hope for a favorable outcome in the face of adversity or a difficult situation. You're a living example of the continuity of life. Cherished values will continue to live and grow. Sometimes we must allow a current chapter to close so that the new chapter may begin. That's a great card to pull, Jeannie. Thank you very much for that.
Did we pull one for Dr. Jeff? I know you read one he pulled, but he would like one too. I don't
know. Have you got one there for Dr. Jeff, Michael?
I do. And I have, it's number 33. Preference in principle. Hmm. Now, have we pulled that one in a while?
We haven't in a while, no.
I don't think we had. A mark of knowledge and wisdom is knowing when and how to offer an opinion or voice a complaint. If it is a matter of preference, yield. If it is a matter of principle, policy, or law, stand firm. It's important to know when and where to pick your battles. Be selective regarding the areas in which you invest your energy.
Ooh, that's interesting. That must be. Ooh, it's a mystery. I think there's a mystery in there. Oh, Omar just picked number 33, and we just read that. Preference and principle. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is.
Good one.
Very good. I think we got everybody. If we missed you, just put your name in the chat real fast, and we'll. We'll get to that right away. I don't think we missed anybody, but at any rate, I'll just start wrapping things up here. It's been a great discussion, a lot of input, and we appreciate that. Hopefully you found something that was encouraging, comforting, or stimulating. And there's a lot of hope and comfort in the whole concept of life after death, because we don't end here, folks. So have faith, have comfort, have hope, and look at that good side and make the most of your life here and now. All right, so next week we'll have another topic, and hopefully you'll have some time to join us again and offer your input. And again, if you have any topics you'd like to hear discussed on this program, don't hesitate to email us admin@icmhchurch.org, or if you're a student, you can send it to the regular email addresses as well. So thanks to everyone for joining us, those listening to the archives. Thanks to Dr. Hunter and to Michael Kelly as well. Till next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.